extraneous, his dark materials.
Welcome back, everybody.
Before we say another thing, Supernatural is coming back, and it's the last season of Supernatural, and the ladies over at Extraneous Pod Supernatural are doing a great job recapping everything. It's the culmination of like a year and a half of work for them, so they're very excited, and you should go check that out.
Yeah, there's no better companion than the Extraneous folks.
Also, you're listening to a Mischief Media podcast. You can go to mischiefmerch.com for all of our really cool merch. We have our own. We actually own the Jordan College sweatshirt now.
It's real. It exists. You should get one. They're so cool.
It's like so collegiate. I'm going to like bust out with a latte in my hand going to my 12 p.m. Friday elective on the quad. Thing.
People will ask you where Jordan College is if you wear it.
Yeah,
they'll be like, oh, I've never heard of that school. It looks so authentic.
It's really cool.
And you can tell them all about his dark material.
We also have a Stay Extra shirt.
Oh, it's so cool.
Stay Extra. All right. I'm Melissa.
I'm Will.
And you're listening to a Mischief Media podcast. This is Extraneous, where we go deep on stories you love and come back with a little something extra.
That's right. And today we are coming back with a little something extra on the new His Dark Materials Season 2 trailer.
So as you know, if you are a listener of this podcast, we have of late a little irregularly because of the world, but we have been reading the His Dark Materials books. We are very close to finishing Subtle Knife. In fact, we will finish it on this feed before the Subtle Knife HBO series starts, which is November 16th. So stay tuned for that.
Yep, absolutely.
That's it. Let's get
to
it.
That's it, yeah.
The world's changing. We've all sensed it.
The prophecy is clear.
Our duty is to protect the girl and the boy, wherever they are.
Something happened in this world. There's something important that connects us to this place.
People are going to be looking for us. We need to be careful.
Witches have been conspiring against the Magisterium. We must take control of this new world. Find the child.
She's in another world entirely.
You're a long way from home, Mr. Scoresby.
I've heard about your powers.
And I'm looking for a girl named Lyra.
You will need a knife.
One that could slice between worlds.
Then we better get going.
Leave the winds to me.
The child will bring the end of the Great War. It is time to unite and destroy the Magisterium.
Stop this threat. Sacrifice whatever is necessary.
I found her. She's in another world, plagued by specters.
We're not safe here. I think I'm changing. We both are.
You are so like I was.
It's time to fight.
Run. Greatest war there ever was is coming.
Wow, man. So I can't help it. I'm excited for this trailer. I'm excited for season two.
I love how you act like that's something you have to excuse or be sorry right? about. I'm really excited for season two. What particularly in this trailer made you pumped?
The knife looks great.
A, yes, it does. Though I'm always I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
No, like, that's
going
right.
on a thing.
That's right. The knife looks great. The witches look great. The witches seem, I don't know, they seem to be more combative. We're going to get more witches, I think, this season.
What gave it away? Was it the war sign painted over Serafina Pekka's eye? Was it like the war gear they're wearing that they all seem to have coordinated?
Yeah, they're wearing their armor.
Instead of her slips of loose silk fabric that she was wearing in the Arctic, they're finally wearing, you know,
Mm-hmm. Breastplate by Alexander McQueen.
Exactly.
I think it's the vibe. So there's a lot of McQueen in this whole trailer, really.
It's so true.
Which is perfect for them.
It's so true. They're so dramatic.
The fact that the Magisterium is like doing aerial barrel bombs on...
Yeah, what do you think they're bombing?
I think they're bombing the Witch's Island. So this is my interpretation of this. Let's just get into this part. It seems like the witches, we see the witches moot, right?
Yes.
And
witch moot.
Witch moot. The witch moot. I always want to say the all thing because I think it's like related to the all thing.
But the all thing?
It's a like a Viking. It's basically like a Viking moot.
You know so many Viking things that I do not.
I know. All I know is Viking things.
All he knows is Viking things.
And it seems like the witches are much more unified against the Magisterium in this season than in the books. In the books, it's like most of the witches seem to be, at least at the beginning, on the Magisterium side. And the Lake Inara witches, I guess, are kind of an exception. In this, we get the sense that the witches are much more united against the Magisterium, which...
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, I think I'm excited for that. I think
I think the reason it makes sense is that we never really meet the witches who are against. I mean, you do, but yeah, it's not a major plot point. They're not a faction you have to fight. They just are. You just know that there are witches on the other side,
right?
And it's just like, screw it. Let's just wait. Yeah, because Ruta Scotti, who looks amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Ruta Scotti says it's time to, like, you know, burn the Magisterium to the ground and turn them all into dust or something very similar to that.
To be fair, that's probably what Ruta Scotti says about most things.
They got my coffee horror wrong.
Exactly,
it's time to burn this coffee house to dust.
This Starbucks will not exist to oblivion. Ruta Scotti and the Fire Queen from Avatar, I feel like,
Azula.
Would be that. Yeah. Her and Azula would just
Ruta
be
Scotti
down
is
together.
Of sane mind. Let's be.
That's fair.
Of sound mind.
That's fair.
While Azula, but I do Azula in the episode with the volleyball.
Right. Exactly.
We will burn our competition to the ground, and their children will live to bear their shame through eons of ignominy. And you know, and everybody's like, "Can you serve?" Yeah, that's Ruta Scotti.
Yeah. But then the Magisterium, it looks like they, I think, are bombing the witch moot. The reason I think that is because we see a shot of the island and it early on in the trailer, and it's kind of sandwiched between Lee Scoresby and Sexy Priest scenes. But if you look at that flash of the island carefully, you see that there's actually witches flying over it.
Okay, because I was curious. I wrote even in my notes... what are they bombing and what is this island?
Yeah, I think that's an establishing shot for the witch's moot that we see.
Got it.
And then I think, because it looks like it's the same island that they're bombing, I think the Magisterium is like, the witches are uniting against us. We need to go make a strike. Because then you see that, like, very ethereal, I'm doing ethereal hand motions that you can't see.
He's actually doing ethereal hand motions.
Shot with like Ruta Scotti and Serafina Pecola, and they're all like watching. It seems like they're watching the explosions, like in terror, like, oh, what has happened to us? So anyway, that's my interpretation. Could be totally wrong, but I am excited for like just full on warfare between the Magisterium with all their like military industrial complex and the witches with all their like Alexander McQueen armor and tactical precision.
One of the things that we talked about in the last season was that the witches were a little bit OP. I mean, Serafina swooped her way into Bolvangar, and you know, it was sort of like, well, couldn't she have just come?
She killed
like Neo in there.
Exactly.
You know, and maybe what they're doing is setting the witches up with a proper enemy, a proper challenge. There's always like, you have to scale the battle appropriately, or the stakes, or there are no stakes. And so maybe that's how they're trying to kind of rectify that.
Yeah, I agree. And that is an interesting kind of idea, right? The sort of like, sort of individually OP witches against like huge numbers and vast amounts of like artillery and sort of modern warfare.
Right.
And who's going to win?
What's interesting also about these witches is that, like, this is not the book.
Yeah, none of this is textual.
That's not, I mean, the witches, they're against the Magisterium, you got that idea, but, like, they never overtly said it. They are set against anything that endangers Lyra, but they don't take a side in a war. Like, that is very explicitly stated that right. What they do at the end of book one is incredibly unlike them. So for them to be like, all right, we did it once, screw it, let's go and let's mount up and take down the world's biggest organization.
Right.
Because they're like a bit of a departure.
Exactly. Because they're not interested in human things. No. Right. And that's how, like, some witches are for the Magisterium, some are against the Magisterium, but neither seems to be acting in like an ethical way, in the way that you or I might understand it in our human world. It's like based on their interpretation of like celestial and natural signs, they're just kind of interpreting things. It's almost like theology in a weird way.
Yeah. But they also remember in this book, and we see it in this trailer, they question torture one of the witches for the name that Lyra is referred to, which Serafina Pecola goes in and kills her before they can torture the name out of her. And that may be sort of the turning point of, okay, we can't stay out of this any longer. Look what is happening. It is this entity called the Magisterium. So maybe they're just making those lines clearer because it's television and it's shorter and you have to.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally. That's totally valid. Yeah. I mean, a lot of, as we've talked about, a lot of Philip Pullman stuff is really complex and hard to represent on the screen because it's, you know, it's like a inventing their own sort of ethics system around witches. Then bears have a separate ethics system. And this is all stuff that without a you know, fancy goose of exposition can get tricky to portray.
I want more fancy goose of exposition, except that he's not a goose, but it's okay.
I want the power honk. Where he like honks and everyone runs away. Give me the power honk. Fancy goose. Also, another detail, just because you mentioned this, I'd forgot that it was Serafina who rescues by killing the witch who's being tortured, because it looks like in the trailer, Rude Ascati is actually the one doing that.
I would not be surprised if they change it to Rude Ascati. I wouldn't necessarily be against it either. They need something to show Ruta's fierceness, and maybe I'll put a little bit of a bet that what happens is that in a way to condense everything and introduce Ruta as this you don't F with me person, you see her go into this ship, which is much less of like a wooden schooner that I imagined in my head, and more of like a military grade, you know, metal warship. So if you see her go in, do that, fight her way out, like, you already know what Serafina Pecola is capable of, so why have her do it again? Have Ruta do it so that you see what she's capable of, and then she brings that news back to the witches, and that's the way, that's when she's saying we must set ourselves against the Magisterium once and for all.
Oh, that would make a lot of sense.
You know,
and that would be totally in keeping with Ruta's character.
Yeah, I'd be okay with this. It is such a beautiful, if you haven't read the book, it is such a beautiful moment. It's the first time in the books I cry when I read them, is when Serafina comes and smiles for her and says that Yambayaka is here, that, you know, her suffering is over, and she realizes that, sort of like Harry realizing he can do the Patronus, she realizes that she is Yambayaka in that moment, and it's incredibly beautiful. You're not going to get that subtle religious pondering in the television show, so it's okay.
I'm impressed you made it that far with that. I think when the Egyptian spy dies.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, that was it for me. That was my first.
Really? That early in the first book?
Yeah, it's just that I cannot deal with the connection between the person and the demon. Mm-hmm. Like, every time that gets severed, even if it's good person or bad person. Or
when,
like,
they panic. And
I just...
Yep.
Anyway.
Because it's so, I mean, let's be honest, it's a reminder of our connections with our pets.
Right. Exactly.
Even though it's way stronger.
Our little guy. Yeah. And, like, you know, all
life.
All of their human contacts.
All other people you love.
Yeah. Right.
Any human contacts.
Yeah, it's concentrated, like, loss.
And
Cool. Love to feel that.
So you have the witches on one side and you have the Magisterium. And then we got a couple of shots of the Magisterium of Father, what's his face, with Snake. I can't. There are a couple of priests, and I should have looked this up before we started, but I'll correct it next time. I think it's Father MacPhail.
Yeah,
with the snake, MacPhail. The snake demon. Yep. He seems to be testifying, and he's sort of saying, where Lyra and Will are and that they're in another world and we must take control of this new world, which is new. Like, Chitagatse doesn't seem to be under siege, unless I'm misremembering.
No.
From the Magisterium. I think because they can't.
It can't be.
They can't go in there.
Yeah.
So you see the Magisterium has designs on. But they do the theme of, like, whoever controls the bridge to all these worlds controls the universe.
Right.
That is indicated. And that is indicated as a want and a goal for the Magisterium. This is the key to everything. You must control it.
And keep in mind, so we do know Mrs. Coulter later on does go in there with Lord Boreal. But remember, Mrs. Coulter's, like, personal army has their demons severed. So there's kind of the lingering question of, is her army immune from the specters, because they're kind of already spectered?
Do you think she still has that army?
I think in the books she doesn't. I think in the show, just because they made a much bigger deal of it, I think she's going to end up still having that army.
We do see her. She's more red. There's a lot more.
Yeah, she's a lot more red
in her. So I feel like they're doing an Umbridge thing where in the beginning of movie 5, Umbridge is wearing a very pale pink, and as it goes on and she gets crazier, the pink gets darker and darker and darker.
Really?
Yeah, if you watch movie 5, her outfit just goes from pale to, like, deep magenta.
Wow.
Because she's gone. As she loses her tether, her coloring goes up. So I almost think that's a little bit of a what's happening with Mrs. Coulter. They're emboldening her outfits.
Yeah.
Now that she's more warlike and more, even more sinister.
That's so cool.
We do see a shot of her talking to Lyra. If my memory serves, she doesn't talk to Lyra in the books at all, in this book.
Yes. Yes. I think you're absolutely right. And I had the same thought, that there's an interaction there that is not in the books. And I have no idea where it would be or what it would be, because it's like, they're not really close to each other, I don't think, very much in these books.
No, they're only in the scene where they steal the alethiometer back, and that whole scene. I'm sure they're going to over-dramatize it. Woo! I'm sure they're going to make it more dramatic when they steal the alethiometer back, because why not? Also, we've seen a scene of, like, Boreal tussling, and that would be the only time Boreal was tussling anyone.
Right, you right. Know? Yeah, I mean, it's such a cool, it's such a cinematic scene, so go big on that one, I hope.
Yeah.
But there's no chance to really talk there, especially in the way that they seem to be talking. So I don't know. Maybe she's talking to somebody else.
She says, "You are so like I used to be.
Yeah.
You're so like I was." Would she be saying that to anybody but Lyra?
Maybe she's saying it to the witch that she's torturing.
Oh, that's possible.
Yeah.
That's incredibly possible. We do see her approaching the witch.
Right.
And we do see the witch's demon go out.
Yeah. Yeah, we get a lot of shots of that.
That scene.
Of that whole scene. We see Ruta Scotti, it seems like, infiltrating the boat. We see the demon go out. We see a shot of her sort of bound in the chair. Yeah, that is going to be... I'll be interested to see how they play that. Will they play it with sort of the respect and the beauty? I'm sure it'll be respectful. For all that I have problems with the first season, I would never call it disrespectful in any way.
No, I agree. Well, the demon scene, the separation scene, I thought was really badly handled still.
That's true. I thought it, yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever the adjective is for that. Yeah. It was bad. But
we're here and we're hopeful and we're excited and we know it's a hard job. So
no question. Yeah, no, right. Who knows what my script would look like? Be different, but I don't think it would be good.
Different, but don't worry, it's also worse.
Yeah, different but also bad. What do we think of the shots of Chitagatse?
So it looks very King's Landing-y a little bit to me.
Yeah.
Maybe, I mean, more Mediterranean and less sort of Eastern European than King's Landing looks.
I wonder where they shot it.
I wonder too. I think it was Prague.
Oh, interesting.
If I'm remembering correctly, some of the shots that Amir Wilson had on his Instagram. He was putting up photos before he was even announced.
Yeah, didn't like, he?
Somebody's new to this. Like, it was really cute. So yeah, I think it's somewhere in Prague. It makes sense, but... the whole city has that. I mean, there's like a toppled vegetable cart. They clearly left in a hurry. You see Will and Lyra as a team. Lyra, by the way, wearing pants. I just want to point out. She was very against the pants.
Oh, right.
Remember when she
trousers.
Like, trousers. She would not believe the idea that a girl would put on pants. And I'm glad that's not a plot point. In this, it'd be really hard to explain that plot point these days.
Yeah.
But it was definitely, you know, it made sense for where she came from. But not so much. You do see them in a clothing store.
Oh, interesting.
Very briefly, you see clothes all around them. And it must be that whole, like, just take it. No, we're paying for it. You know, that kind of interchange that Will and she have. But anyway, they're walking through the empty streets and they're heading towards
the tower.
The tower, which looks like the Empire State Building in the middle of a ruined, crumbling city.
Yeah, I agree. The tower facade is a little more Art Deco than I was expecting.
It takes the kind of engineering that I don't know they have, let's just be honest.
Yeah.
To create that tower.
Well, I mean, that's true. They did invent a knife that can cut
through
walls.
That's
fair. It seems like they're pretty
modern.
What if
they stole the tower from other... That's right. They do that, but that's the exact point. They do have other engineering. They do have ways of doing things from other worlds. That's the whole point of the knife.
Mm-hmm.
The knife looks good.
What do you think?
Movie and television props that come from books are so interested in making themselves grand and unique.
Uh-huh.
This knife is said very specifically to look incredibly ordinary and shabby until you look close. So I'm a little bit like, oh, it's got this twisted base and it's okay. Now we will know in the imagery and in the items they sell that it is the subtle knife. They couldn't make it look like a kitchen knife or this wouldn't work. But it's like when Voldemort's wand, sorry, I always have a Harry Potter reference. It's like when Voldemort's wand is made out of bone for some reason in the movies. There's no way. There's no way an 11-year-old goes into Ollivander's shop, walks out with like a curved femur bone wand, and nobody goes, hey, heads up about this kid that just left the shop. You might want to know what his wand was made of. It's femurs.
Human femur. Cool. No, where'd you get that, Ollivander?
Had a regular
How do you stay
wand
in business, Ollivander?
Made of wood. Exactly. Okay, Harry and the Potters. He had a regular wand made of wood, so like, they always seek to kind of boost this stuff in TV and film. I also don't blame them because it has, you know, there are certain masters you have to serve.
Yeah, no, exactly. I hear you. It's also way cleaner and shinier. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's supposed to be like crummy and like there's a little glint on the blade. But, you know, what can you do? Also, we see shots of, it seems like, the knife being forged.
Yeah.
Which... That's a book three thing, right?
No, I mean
when they remake it?
Giacomo is probably telling him about the history of the knife and doing so with magical memory, you know, where you see the scenes.
Doodle-loop, doodle-loop, doodle-loop.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that is the knife.
Let me see. What else did I hold on? Oh, the knife also. So we see Will using it. We see him learning to use it with Giacomo by his side.
Yeah.
It's, again, interesting how obvious the holes in reality are when that is... But again, how are you gonna make that obvious? How are you going to make it, you know, almost impossible to see in a visual medium?
Right. That whole scene is going to be really hard to script, and I'll be interested to see how they play it. Because so much is like... the scene tells you what Will is feeling, and it's the most of the scene is internal to Will's mind. He reaches out and he like puts himself all the way to the edge of the knife and then like feels a little tip in reality. And it's like, that's, none of that stuff is stuff you can easily convey visually.
No.
So
it's going to be like, just feel. And he'll go, okay.
Yeah.
And he'll feel.
Yeah.
Think about the world you want to go to. Okay. And he will, you know.
Yeah. And so we'll try to be forgiving if that scene just ends up like that, because that is a hard scene.
How
so much of this is internal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They did fine with the alethiometer, so.
That's true. They did.
You know.
They didn't do badly.
Other thing about the knife, I really love the shot of during the Tullio fight, how it goes. It does go into the floor like butter.
Yeah.
It's right into, into the floor.
You get a sense of just how sharp and dangerous this thing
is.
Yes,
exactly. It's very cool. Boreal shows up.
So Melissa in our notes has a Boreal the Explorial. I love that.
We should call this episode Boreal the Explorer.
I think we have our, ladies and gentlemen, we have our
he's just, he's here. Everywhere, our guy. He's in London. He's back in the Magisterium. He's uh-huh. wearing one suit. He's wearing an explorer outfit going to Chitagatse. He's on the tower. He's here. He's everywhere.
Let's talk about our friend, your friend and mine, the Spectres.
Okay, tell me your reactions.
So, I don't love the way they look. But the fact that they look like anything is tricky. But I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt that maybe, like, we only see them when they're, like, actually, like, it'll cut between, like, the scene of not being able to see them and then of, like, cut to, like, this is what's really happening to them. And it's all these black masses going in. It looks a little bit like, I don't know, a Harry Potter spell?
The Dementors. They look like the Dementors. Dementors.
Yeah, exactly.
They look very much like the Dementors. I'm sorry, I'm just laughing about the concept scene where it's like, all right, so let's talk about the Spectres. They can't be seen.
They can't be
seen. And when they are able to be seen, they're but a shimmer. Air, it's like, okay, you got to go someplace with that.
Right.
But I feel like they could have done more spooky, shimmery stuff. So I'm really hoping that this formed version of a Spectre is either the camera's view that Lyra and Will do not see, or when it's attacking adults so that we see it. Like, if it's like the camera lens, I'm mm-hmm. okay with that. Because the way Lyra saw them behind Will, it seemed to indicate that she was seeing them for the first time. Because the way that she said, I'm changing. I think we both are changing.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, boy, is this a bad time for the birds and the bees talk. But yeah, you are. And that is why the Spectres are kind of, if they're making themselves apparent, because Will and Lyra maybe aren't fully susceptible to Spectres yet, but they are sort of starting to feed on them a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm down with that.
Same. Yeah, I agree. I think it's hard to really judge the Spectres fully because we're only getting the trailer shots. The trailer shots are going to obviously show us the moments when they're visible because you have to for a trailer. It's very possible that they can develop this more subtly in the actual episode. Because, like, it's difficult to represent invisible stuff and internality and concepts and invisible, stuff
right.
on screen. But people do it a lot. You know, there are a lot of examples of all this stuff being put into film. It's a challenge, but it's a surmountable one. So,
you have to wonder, like, if I was them, I would say, okay, these are very like Dementors. This is another thing in media, in culture, that is very known. These are incredibly like Dementors. Let's avoid the visual representation of Dementors.
Make them not Dementors.
They went right into it, like directly into it.
Yeah.
It is what it is. I mean, there are spectral things that feed on people's souls. So, okay, maybe that's just what that looks like.
Yeah, but they're, in a sense, they're the opposite of Dementors and how they mm-hmm. affect you. They don't, when a Dementor gets you, it's horrific and it's visual and you see like their yes. soul being sucked out and it's painful and it's like, it's really bad. This, one of the great tragedies of this, what makes Spectres so dangerous, is that you just kind of deflate.
You stop existing. Yeah. And that's not what's happening in that trailer. It's yeah. painful. It's basically death.
So this is another example of like where I get frustrated with, like, it seems like the show is just kind of discarding what makes this interesting in it, like, and just putting in like some generic CGI like ghost monster thing. And it's like, is this mm-hmm. going to be the season? I'm optimistic, but again, these are like yeah. little warning signs. Like season one, the whole show seemed to, at every turn, completely disregard the subtlety and the complexity of the book in exchange for just like a, I don't know, a lot of it just looked like a Hobbit sequel or something, you yeah. know, like all CGI, very expensive, not particularly visually or conceptually interesting in any way.
I want to pull back on that a little bit. I'm still very excited. I think we get so excited for perfection. We
sure.
want all the subtleties. And I think we have to just start accepting that some subtlety is not possible in this. And I
well,
hate that.
Not achieved. Let's say that.
That's yeah, not achieved. Yeah. Maybe some of it's not achievable.
And that's okay.
It's okay. It's listen, I want it to be a really good, really fun, really intriguing series so that they can make this Amber Spyglass. And then I want more people to read the book.
Right,
because
totally.
Because they're so good.
And so, let's recognize, this is a huge hit, especially in Britain. It's a massive hit. Among, like, I think, like, a younger crowd, but exactly the type of folks who are going to watch this if they're, like, 13, 14, 15, you know, or, like, they're watching it with their parents. Mm-hmm. It's, like, a family. I think it's at a very family-friendly spot in
the UK. Yes, it is. It ends right before Christmas on purpose.
Oh, okay.
So we always know when it's coming.
And it's like, Friday at 8 p.m. or Sunday at 7 p.m. It's, like, it's at an hour when, like, younger kids are definitely up and watching TV. So all these kids are going to run and read the books and, you know, see all the wonder of the books. So we complain, but the world is not exactly rejecting this. And that's great. That's a good thing. Yeah. We're going to keep being critical when we think it's warranted. But
yeah.
We encourage, watch the thing, read the books. Make more art. So,
all right, we have saved my favorite bromance until the last bit.
Oh man,
a bromance! It's like basically the Titanic up there.
Yeah,
it's. I'm sorry,
the
like
Titanic.
Okay. Hot priest or hot shaman? They're probably not going to call him a shaman in this. It's cool. Probably better. Anyway, he turns around and goes, "Leave the wind to me," and then you see Lee like. On the Zeppelin, like, having the best time of his life because the wind is flying through his hair and he doesn't do anything. It is literally like, I'm flying, Jack. It's the best. Mm. And these two are what slash fiction is made of, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, there's going to be some of
it's
that.
It's so good, though. It's just, I'm about it. It's fine.
Cool.
He does have a ring. It must be his mother's ring.
Yeah.
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 He being Hot Shaman.
Hot Shaman, yeah. Yeah, I'm into it. I think they'd be able to call him a shaman. Is that problematic?
I don't know.
I mean, he
was officially made a shaman by a tribe, so I don't. Right. You know what?
And it's a Tartar culture. It's like it's not like real Tartar. It's like sort of make believe Tartars that have elements of like the Sami culture and various. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if it's problematic. I'd love for you all to tell us on Twitter or tell us in our email, extraneouspod@gmail.com, extraneouspod on Twitter, if it is what you think.
If you think it is.
But my feeling is whether it's right or not in the books, like, it might be so hard to explain in a television show that they might just go past it. And it's fine. He's like, I have magic powers. Okay. You have magic powers. Well, you brought me here with a ring. I'll take that. You know?
Right.
So, yeah. Leave the ring. Leave the wind to me. Hair going. It's amazing. You see the look on Lee's face?
Yeah, he was excited.
He's
into it.
I'm flying. Jack, I'm flying. It's amazing.
I like that shot of him on the little Boston Whaler there with the, you know, little outboard.
Yeah, with
Hester. Hester looks good, man. Hester always looks good.
So anything else about Lee Scoresby and Hot Shaman?
I don't think so. I'm excited for their story. Obviously, we have a big moment coming up. We will see how that moment is handled in this series.
Mm-hmm.
I think Lynn, I'm hoping his writing is better. I think he has the talent.
Meaning the writing given to him.
Right.
Lynn didn't write it.
That's what I mean.
I'm just clarifying.
Yeah. Right. The writing for him. Yeah. Lynn. The rare thing that Lynn hasn't written. I hope the writing for him is better. I think he's up to the task. We definitely know Hot Priest is an incredible actor. If you haven't seen his performance in the Black Mirror episode, it's not one of the better Black Mirror episodes, but his performance in it is insane and great.
This
guy has incredible chops, and I'm really excited to see what he's going to do because I think he could probably turn anything into.
Well, now he's played incredibly good-looking types of religious figures. It's like basically his career now.
Yeah, right.
Incredibly good-looking insert religious figure here. So we'll go see what he becomes next.
Right. The one person I don't think he's played is like a well-adjusted individual. I've not seen him represent
What's
that
the
yet.
Fun in that?
I agree. It's a waste of his talent to be normal.
Yeah.
Man, I am just excited for this. I'm excited for the war. What? Yeah, I know, right?
This is a weird sentence out of context.
One interesting thing. This is maybe totally out of nowhere. But the fact that they're throwing the barrels out of the plane, is this a reference to Syria? The barrel bombs?
Interesting.
It's probably not. It's probably nothing. It's just it looks very obvious. They don't look like normal bombs.
Yeah.
And it seems like a Jack Thorne kind of thing to like write this in and make it, that not. I don't. It's probably not. It's probably.
It could also just be, let's look at what warfare looks like right now to people and what are some of the most harrowing images of warfare that we have right now, and that wouldn't be among them. And so that just maybe where they're pulling.
Yeah, you know? That's very possible. Or they're just like, what would bombs look like in this sort of like, sort of, what's the word? Steampunky post-Victorian. This is more like Edwardian, like even like Art Deco, like 1910s seems to be the vibe more than like the steampunk. 1880s. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I'm excited for all of it.
I'm excited. And I'm excited for next week's rundown of chapters 12 and 13.
12 and 13, I believe.
Subtle Knife. Yeah, Subtle Knife. The week after that, chapters 14 and 15. And then we're back talking about each episode of the show.
So join us for sort of the run through Subtle Knife. It's kind of a sprint to the starting line of the show. The Subtle Knife is so cool. I'm so excited to get into these chapters. There's so much to talk about. We will try to keep our episodes a reasonable length, but like those of you who have read the books understand.
There's so much. It's insane.
Yeah, that'll be really fun.
Cool. And then right after the show concludes, we're getting right into Amber Spyglass. And while we are getting into Amber Spyglass, we will be prepping what comes after Amber Spyglass. What comes after. Which you will discover.
Definitely. And hey, if you have any awesome ideas of things we should consider, let us know.
Extraneouspod@gmail.com.
What are our socials? Extraneous?
Extraneouspod on the Twitters. Extraneous.pod on Instagram, because Extraneouspod wasn't available, which is wild. But just look us up on Instagram. You'll get it. And then the same Extraneouspod on Facebook. We also have a Patreon at Mischief. Patreon.com/makingmischief. We put up extra content there. We put up lots of fun stuff. We have a Discord where we can talk about this stuff. It'll be great to talk about the series.
When
you know, like the Monday morning rundown of what happened in the episode, which we should get in there and do.
Absolutely.
I'm very excited because this wasn't active last year when this was happening. So
right, the Patreon, just so you know, is awesome. It covers all of the Mischief podcasts. There's artwork, there's articles, there's extra episodes, there's the Discord, which is like basically like station 9 3/4 or platform 9 3/4 for the whole Mischief world.
That's like such a good way to describe it.
Yeah, it's just like everything, like the podcasts are being talked about, like Broadway, Harry Potter, culture, quarantine stuff, self-promotion, pets. Yeah, a lot of pet pics. So definitely check out the Patreon. Patreon.com/makingmischief. It's a wonderland of fandom and extraness. And what could be better?
I know one thing that can be better.
One thing.
If you would.
If I would.
Would you? Will you? Would you?
Won't I?
Can you?
Stay.
Extra.
Thanks, guys.
How do you want to start? Hi, George. Hi, sweetie. It's like, make me a podcast star. Wow. Hi, I see you.
Let me podcast.
You are always in the podcast because you're a loud AF little guy. Mm-hmm.